Years ago, H.G. Wells visualized roads such as these in his science fiction fantasies. And today, they're a reality.
You're listening to The Afternoon Commute. John Adams. And Chris Kendall.
Welcome to The Afternoon Commute. Today is September 15th, 2015. If you'd like to hear previous episodes of The Afternoon Commute, you can go to hoaxbusterscall.com. You'll find those posted up there alongside previous and the most recent episode of Chris's Monday night broadcast, the original Hoaxbusters Call. Also posted up there are various videos and articles, some of them original in nature, so make sure you check those out. On Friday, September 11th, Chris was on the RBN, Republic Broadcasting Network, with Clint Richardson on his Corporation Nation radio show, so make sure you check that out. Chris, you did a very good job on there, just want to
say.
Thank you. And I was recently on a podcast with Marcus Allen on truthin7minutes.com podcast. We did a 20-minute little mini chat about political dialectics, so check that out if that's something you're interested in at truthin7minutes.com. Our guest today is no stranger to the afternoon commute. He's a nice guy. He's an intelligent guy, and we always enjoy talking to him. His name is Pierce Redmond, and he's from PorkinsPolicyReview.com. Make sure you go check out some of the stuff he's got up there. Some of our audience might know him from the CIA in Hollywood podcast that he does, which Chris and I both listen to when there's new ones up there, and we are eagerly looking forward to the second season. And Pierce does that with his friend Tom Secca from the Grassy Knolls of Yorkshire. Maybe I will have to incorporate my Tom Secca impersonation into the next Alex Jones skit we do.
I hope so. I've been enjoying both of those so far.
So anyways, yes, Pierce, how are you doing, sir? Good to have you with us.
I'm good. I'm doing great. I'm looking forward to this. I'm sorry we were having some Skype problems, and I'm actually talking on my phone right now, but it does, it gives, you know, it's like a very, very old school radio vibe to it right now, so I like that.
That's right. We'll just pretend we're on the Tom Valentine show.
Yeah.
Chris thinks that's funny, right, Chris?
Yeah, I don't know who Tom Valentine is, but it sounded funny.
Well, it's interesting because we're actually going to talk about the history of Patriot Radio and the alternative media and where all of this type of stuff comes from, and then I'm sure we'll make our way into the resurgence of the white nationalist, white supremacist thing being reinjected back into Patriot Radio and alternative media, just all at once, coincidentally, of course.
Yeah.
So, well, I've been looking into this stuff for quite a while. I was actually thinking about doing a Hoaxbusters Call report about John Birch Society and Patriot Radio and that type of stuff as well. It's such a big subject. It really is. If you start looking at all of the branches, like where, if you try to get try to come up with like a basic scenario of where a lot of this came from, it actually comes from a lot of different places, and actually stems all the way back into the 1930s.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't have to go that far back, but I'll give a brief synopsis of kind of where I'm coming from with it, and that was around about the time that the Depression happened. You know, people have, in America, for the most part, if you go look at, you know, old history books just kind of old history in general, you see that people really are, in the general population, really are and were skeptical of the way government acted. There was a inbred kind of you know, suspicion of government collusion with big business and that type of stuff. And so the Depression got a lot of people curious as to, you know, why something that, like that would happen. And a lot of what you would call radical or extremist groups, at least that's what the media would call them, come out of the Depression era. And there was a whole bunch of different groups. There was a Catholic priest who was also on the radio. He's very famous. In the past, he was Father Coughlin, and they were called the Coughlinites, and they were very anti-Roosevelt, anti-New Deal, anti-Jewish bankers. And then once he got up into the time where the Nazis were coming to power, he was actually very pro Nazi Germany as well. And you see a lot of that too with a lot of the people who were kind of touted as heroes to a lot of the early movement, like Charles Lindbergh, Henry Ford used to put Protocols of the Elders of Zion and all of the new Model Ts. That should be proof right there that the Jews don't run at all. Just the fact that an elitist like Henry Ford is putting all that stuff out there. Robert Taft, which Ron Paul likes to talk about how, I can't remember what Robert Taft's book is. I know the Ron Paul book's called A Foreign Policy of Freedom. The Robert Taft book from the 50s is called A Foreign Policy of Non-Intervention or something like that. I can't remember. And like a lot of that stuff sounds good, but Robert Taft also was a Skull and Bones member. And he is like the grandson of William Taft. But he was, I think he was very pro-Germany as well at the same time. So there's some of that stuff coming into it as well, where you're seeing a lot of this stuff once again, this rewriting of history through alternative sources that Hitler was a good guy. Hitler was really against the New World Order, even though he used the term New World Order himself. And so once you get up into the 1950s, and I'll be real brief about this so you guys can chime in too and not hog all the time, but once you get into the 1950s, you have the left, the what I would call the academic left, kind of coming out against anti-communist McCarthyites. And then when the John Birch Society is formed in 1958, they really start coming out strong against anti-communist, and the John Birch Society is kind of the birdcage liner that takes all of the, takes all of the crap for being anti-communist and all that. And that's where the sole kind of attacks are focused on. And I think it really succeeded because out here in Los Angeles, in Los Angeles and Orange County in Southern California, there was a large contingency of John Birchers out in these areas. And it's funny, a couple of years ago, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, I was watching this PBS documentary on the history of the Chandler family, which the Chandlers are basically the Rockefellers of Los Angeles. And they ran and started the LA Times, and they had a whole bunch to do with, the Mulholland Water Project that stole all the water from Central California and brought it down into Los Angeles. And the documentary started out, I was really surprised, the documentary starts out, and they show this picture of G. Edward Griffin from the 1960s, and he's talking, and I'm like, what the heck's G. Edward Griffin? Like, what is this about? Because the sound was down, and I was watching it with subtitles. And so the subtitles come on, and it starts talking about how the L.A. Times launched a series of op-ed attacks against John Birch Society. And they even say in there, like, start talking about how, like, a lot of people saw that and went and joined the John Birch Society because they saw all of those attacks, right? So that got me real interested in it, and that's why I was sending you guys those articles. And there's a book that I have here in my hand, and it is from the year 1963, which is only 5 years after the John Birch Society started. It is called The Radical Right, edited by Daniel Bell. It has Richard Hofstadter, David Reisman, the guy who wrote The Lonely Crowd, H.H. Hyman, S.M. Lipset. I don't know who some of these guys are. I know who Alan F. Weston is. That was the article that I sent you from Commentary Magazine, which was a neoconservative magazine that started, was started by Irving Kristol. So there's a lot of stuff here, and really, if you go back and you look up, if you go to the Book of Knowledge, Wikipedia, I'm saying that facetiously, you will see that when you look up the survivalist movement, or you look up the patriot movement, or you look up militias, or any of that type of stuff, they always mention that it goes back to the John Birch Society, pretty much, for the most part, that that's where far-right radical extremism comes from, the loins of the John Birch Society. And so I guess that's kind of the starting point. Pierce, you got anything you want to add to that?
No, just to agree with you. And I actually didn't, you're just mentioning G. Edward Griffin. I didn't realize until recently. I was looking up some stuff on the JBS, and he was apparently, I didn't know that he was like a lifelong member and a contributing editor to The New American, which is their magazine. And I think even some of his books are published under the John Birch's publishing arm.
That's
which
correct.
Would say all you need to know about G. Edward Griffin and his agenda and whatnot.
Well, it's an interesting thing. I just found out by looking up stuff, and I don't know if this is coincidence or what, but there is an overabundance of guys who start their name with the letter G who just happen to be officers and presidents of the John Birch Society. It's really weird. If you go look that up, I just noticed that the other day. I was like, look at all these guys who start their name with the letter G affiliated with John Birch. I wonder what that is, but G. Edward Griffin's, I'm going off memory here, but G. Edward Griffin's first book, I believe it was called The Fearful Master, A Second Look at the United Nations. It was published by Western Islands Publishing. And I own I have a pretty big library, not as big as some, but I do own a lot of books. I have a floor-to-ceiling bookshelf, like a library bookshelf, full of all sorts of goodies. And I own a plethora of Western Island books that I have literally found all of them in thrift stores and used bookstores across Orange County. That's my empirical evidence that the John Birch Society was very prominent in this area back then, because I would go into thrift stores, I would just find dozens of copies of these old books, and I own quite a bit of them. And a lot of them are have very interesting information and very true information. A lot of them are just plain hilarious, I have to say.
Yeah.
My favorite one is one called The Red Web. That's my favorite one. And it's got a picture of the Capitol building with this red spider web wrapped around it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so... The commies are under the bed and that type of stuff. But the most famous I would say there's actually two that are neck and neck, and they both come from interesting sources. John Birchers themselves, though these books were not published by the John Birch Society, and that would be None Dare Call It Treason, published in 1963 by John A. Stormer. And, of course, None Dare Call It Conspiracy, published in 1971, I think it was, by Gary Allen and Larry Abraham. And if anybody's familiar with Bob Chapman of the International Forecaster, he is now deceased, he was the one who financed that book. And from what I've read a little bit of history and heard people talk about it before, that the John Birchers and the libertarian types would go stand down on Sunset Boulevard and pass out free copies, and then they're called conspiracy to people on like Saturday nights.
Hmm.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I mean, one real bizarre little thing, but do you know who George Allen's son is?
Yeah, Gary Allen's son. He runs Politico.
Yeah, he's the chief political writer for Politico, and he's a very bizarre character. Never speaks about people. It wasn't until very recently that people actually knew who his father was. And no one knows actually where Mike Allen lives in D.C. He gives people different dates for his birthday, and he claimed to the New York Times that he grew up in a quote apolitical household, which I just could not believe at all. and of course he's known for softballing questions to the Bush administration. But all that I was going to say too, I mean, so much of how I got interested, and like you were saying, John, this stuff comes back very far, and it's really interesting to see how the truth movement has formed because of the John Birch Society. And I couldn't recommend more going out and watching The Secret Right by Josh Reeves, which has a ton of information on the JBS, the Council for National Policy, the connection there. I will say, yes, great. I think there's parts where I kind of disagree, and Josh Reeves kind of gets into a long-winded thing about the Jesuits and the, that sort of stuff, but his research is 100% sound. And he also just makes some really interesting points, too, about, taking some of what the John Birch Society was talking about, which may not have really been all that terrible, but manipulating it, and manipulating, more importantly, the people involved within it. And, I mean, again, too, look no further than who is John Birch himself. He was just an OSS spy. He was just an agent of the government, which is obviously none of the Birchers ever say that, And
Have you ever read that book? Have you ever read The Life of John Birch by Robert Welch?
No, I haven't. I haven't.
Okay, I'm going to go out there. You might disagree with me. That's okay, because we've disagreed in the past, and we're cool with that. I'm going to say I call into question the entire story of John Birch. It sounds like a fabricated story. I read it years ago, even before I started questioning things a lot deeper than I do. I read that book, and I'm all, this sounds like the most perfect story to evoke emotionalism in people who are patriotic.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounded too perfect to me. And so I'm not saying that I know for a fact that it's fake, but I have a suspicion that it might be a fake story just because, like you're pointing out, he was an OSS officer, he's an intelligence asset, and the story is almost too perfect. And another thing was the tagline for the book was, find out about America's first casualty of the Cold War.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I wouldn't disagree with you. It could totally be, I'm sure, I believe he was definitely a real person, I think. But what his story is, God only knows. And it could, I wouldn't be surprised either. And I think, again, that's the, you're talking about, the first casualty of the Cold War and all this sort of stuff and the communism and Reds under the bed. And I think it was totally designed to elicit an emotion. And it's scary, you're saying at the beginning, the sort of white nationalist sentiment that's becoming very in vogue. And, you know, I wonder, you know, again, going back, I mean, what was the John Birch Society really about? You know, was this really about communism? Or was this about some much deeper, sort of a project? Because again, at least according to Josh Reeves and what he's, researched, so many of these John Birch guys were members of the CFR, of the Trilateral Commission, no, the very groups that they claimed were being run by the, you know, the evil commies to take over the world. So
that's right. And Robert Welch and his brother James owned a candy company, Welch's Candy Company, which they sold to Nabisco, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And James Welch went on to be employed by Nabisco after that. And like you could maybe say this is kind of a stretch, but I'll just put it out there anyways, whether it's a stretch or not. But Nabisco is a acronym for National Biscuit Company, right? And one of the Nabisco headquarters was actually in Buena Park, California, which is in Orange County. So I know about Nabisco real well here. And actually knew some people who used to work there. But National Biscuit Company, now, National Biscuit Company was owned by the Rockefellers. Okay?
Yeah.
And when Nabisco became the largest food conglomerate at one point because it merged with another food thing owned by the Rockefellers. And here's how you know that it was a darling of the Rockefellers, because it was called Standard Brands. Standard, as in Standard Oil. So, it was directly, Nabisco purchased the, Welch's Candy Company, and so I find that to be, pretty interesting. But there's another thing, there's this contradiction that kind of takes place as well all over the anti-communist John Birch, world. Is that there's something called the Manufacturers Association of America, and a lot of them were John Birchers, and a lot of them were corporate heads, heads of big corporations, even people, like I said, employed by Rockefeller-owned companies were all anti-communist. And I could see how that worked, because what was, if you read the radical right by the academic left, they put out the meme in those books and in those publications that the Birchers, like I said, this is social engineering is what it is. That's what I think John Birch is all about. It's a social engineering tool for the time period. And what they did was they put out the meme that John Birch Society and people who are of the extreme right and who believe in conspiracy theories, that they are these wealthy, well-to-do elitists who are racists, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they're putting out. Like every single one of these essays in this book talks about how racist the well-to-dos are, right? And it'll even go as far as to say that, you know, well, yeah, Senator McCarthy is not a racist, but the people who follow him. In fact, I'm bringing that up right here. I've got it right here. It says, McCarthy's support can be attributed to his identification as a Republican fighting Democrats. In other words, the vast bulk of his backing came from regular Republicans, while the large majority of Democrats opposed him. Although McCarthy never attacked minority ethnic groups and seemed to have consciously tried to avoid linking Jews to communism, many of his critics have felt certain that McCarthyism appealed to religious and racial bigots. Liberals have generally believed that anti-Semitism and rightist politics are associated, and have therefore assumed that while any given form of right-wing extremism may not be overtly anti-Semitic, such movements attract anti-Semites. With respect to McCarthyism, there has been the further assumption that those who believed in Jews as a hidden source of social ills would also be disposed to believe in a hidden domestic communist conspiracy that had infiltrated the government. And here's the thing about all this stuff. There was communist infiltration. There were real communists. There were real communist groups in America. There was all sorts of nefarious activities being done by communists and all that. And I just wanted to bring this up. I thought you would find this pretty interesting, Pierce, that my grandparents were actual volunteer citizen spies in San Francisco in the 1950s.
Really?
Yes.
Like that.
Okay, so what they would do, because San Francisco was arguably still is a main hub, around the Berkeley area of communist activity. My grandparents did not work for the government. They were volunteers. This was, you can go look this up. It's historically accurate here. My grandma would told me a couple of stories about it, how they would go sit and find out where communist meetings were. They would attend it, and then they would take down notes and then go report on all the people who went to it. And so that's a good way for the government to not have to pay anybody to go get some names of people who back in that day might be the potential bearded man with the turban.
Yeah,
got all that going on today now. Same thing.
Yeah, and so what it was is there was... I don't believe that there was actual real communist Cold War threat. I think that, behind closed doors, I mean, you got Khrushchev coming over here, hanging out in Hollywood, visiting, hanging out with Marilyn Monroe and Frank Sinatra. He wasn't the evil guy. Everybody was touting, in the news and in the media, and when Eisenhower and Kennedy are up there with their hawkish stances on war. But then it's okay for Khrushchev to come over and hang out with Marilyn Monroe. It's like, what? So there's a lot of weird stuff going on there. But yet down on the street, the man on the street, just like today, he was scared, like my grandparents, they were scared out of their minds of communists.
Mm-hmm.
So much so that they would... Go ahead.
No. Finish your message.
I was just going to say, so much so that they would even volunteer to go sit in communist meetings because they were so afraid that communism was going to destroy their way of life, and meanwhile it's being run as a top-down operation from both sides, both the anti-communist and the communist.
Yeah, I was going to kind of, two things to kind of add to that. One is that the current CEO of the John Birch Society, Art Thompson, brags constantly on his YouTube videos about working for the police in Seattle, infiltrating, leftist and communist groups, which I just found so bizarre because so much, they'll talk about in the New American, the police state, and then you got Art Thompson bragging about working for the police. But anyway, and back to the whole threat of communism. What I found interesting doing a lot of the sort of research into the CIA in Hollywood, where there's obviously tons of communist-leaning people there, and you start to see, though, is that the CIA doesn't necessarily hate communism, necessarily in the way that we think they do, and that they were fine with working with communists like people like Dalton Trumbo. There's a movie coming out with him very soon. I'm sure it's not going to pick up on any of this. But that's the thing that's interesting. Again, so much of the John Birch Society, and you're right, too, in saying there totally were communists here. And I think that's just kind of, well, duh, I mean, I'm sure the Soviet Union, they had their moles, in the FBI or in, the CIA, the same way that we had moles in the KGB and, the domestic spying apparatus in the Soviet Union. That's just, obvious. That's how spy work works.
Real quick, let me add on that point while you brought it up, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
you brought up the FBI. Now, the FBI, during the 50s and 60s, seems to be the darling of the John Birch Society. They love the FBI. The FBI is anti-communist. J. Edgar Hoover is a good guy. In fact, J. Edgar Hoover's book, Masters of Deceit, is always, you'll see, when you read a lot of the John Birch publications, the old ones, the 60s ones, you'll find that they're referencing stuff out of Masters of Deceit as if it's some, you know, Bible of anti-communist stuff. And I really could only get through about 20 pages of J. Edgar Hoover's book before I started cracking up, laughing. It's amazing. It's brilliant. There's a lot of FBI guys, interestingly enough, associated with John Birch, who came out, like Cleon Skousen, was an FBI man, and he wrote The Naked Communist, which I own a first edition copy of, found in an Orange County thrift store. And I also own a copy of The Naked Capitalist, his critique of tragedy and hope, as well. And Cleon Skousen, like I said, he was an FBI agent. He's a Mormon. That seems to go hand in hand, Mormons and intelligence agencies at a certain level. And I'm sure that's entirely a whole different show altogether. Then you have Dan Smoot, who is very famous, and another book that I found a first edition copy of is The Invisible Government from 1962. And that's really one of the first books, besides Morris Beale's book on the drug industry, which was written in the 50s. That's really one of the first books I've ever seen where it talks about the CFR, the Bilderberg Group, all that stuff. Now, the first edition of Dan Smoot's book, The Invisible Government, is not published by Western Islands, but the one in the 70s is republished by Western Islands. And the reason I brought him up was because, once again, he was an FBI agent, and he was actually the administrative assistant to J. Edgar Hoover. So he was high up in the FBI. And so the one thing that the John Birch Society and McCarthyism definitely succeeded at was creating the notion that a police state is okay.
Yeah, as long as they're going after the commies.
That's right. That's right.
They'll never turn on us.
But see, it changed culture altogether, because before that, I mean, people weren't really into that. People were, it was a different culture where people were kind of like, okay, well, you know, yeah, somebody has a different belief than me. I'm not really that interested in, you know, whatever it is, you know, you want to do it. But the Red Scare brought about this, that's actually the second Red Scare. The first Red Scare was when the Bolsheviks came in. They were scaring everybody back then too, but not so much as to, where you want to spy on your neighbors and do all that type of stuff. That really was the impetus for the Big Brother type society, was the anti-communist movement was, well, yeah, it's privacy is good as long as you're not a communist.
Yeah.
And then it's okay for the government to peep in and on everything that you're doing, and we need to have citizen spies spying on you. So there you go.
Yeah. No, and again, I mean, and at the same time, I think that, you know, the people at the top of this whole, you know, it's funny you're saying that the people, you know, you get these Birchers that are, you know, associated with the FBI, but then you get, you know, you go up another level, and you get, again, linking the conspiracy culture, truth movement, with the John Birch Society. You get, you know, a lot of stuff coming out in the wake of the JFK assassination. But then you have people like Edwin Walker, who's a former general, who's a John Birch member and was deeply connected to the assassination. And he's, you know, quote-unquote, he was shot by Oswald just before JFK was killed. And this is then all corroborated by George DeMorenschildt, who's obviously some sort of CIA guy. And that's not the only, these other weird John Birch connections with Robert Kennedy. But, yeah, again, I mean...
Guy Bannister?
Yeah.
That's the first place I ever heard of the John Birch Society. It was in that scene in the JFK movie back when I was a teenager, was watching that, and Kevin Costner and the guy are walking, and then he says, oh, yeah, Guy Bannister, John Birch Society, FBI, and... Mm-hmm. I didn't know, and it wasn't until I heard that Bob Dylan song that I heard of the John Birch Society again.
Yeah, and again, I mean, you just sort of have to, I don't really think you can separate the two. And of course, if you go to the JBS website right now, they have a page where it's like myths and the truth, and they're like, no, we're never connected with the JFK, blah, 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 you know, don't worry, there's nothing to see here. You know, move along. Edwin Walker was a great guy, but whatever. But there is a connection there. And furthermore, I when you start to dig that away, it's not about communism, you know, at that point. You know, they might have been telling themselves, oh, you know, JFK was a commie. But the people, you know, you look at Edwin Walker, it wasn't really about communism. If anything, they were afraid of the very minor possibility that JFK might try and, you know, sort of corral the intelligence state a little bit, you know, and this goes beyond politics when you're talking about assassinating a world leader like that and setting a precedent for all, future U.S. presidents after that, that, you know, if you even hint at wanting to, you know, corral us in, we're going to blow your brains out all over your wife. And furthermore, you know, just sort of to say that I think that the John Birch Society uses the cover of communism, in order to mask their real agenda. And again, you know, on the same level of an Edwin Walker, John Singlaub, who was deeply involved in Iran-Contra. And yeah, while he might be claiming, oh, this is all about stopping the communists and whatnot, you know, it's about drug trafficking. You know, it's about maintaining a grip on the drug world.
Right.
It's not really, you know, it's not really about communism or any of that. You know, once you reach that level where you're organizing death squads in El Salvador and Nicaragua and things, you're not really it's not about communism anymore. I mean, you know, allegiances like that mean nothing when you're, you know, part of the deep state like that. So, again, I think that's what they're using. And again, also to sort of acclimate people to the idea that, as you said, you know, they'll go on and on about, the police are evil. We don't want a national police. But at the same time, I mean, it's not like the John Birch Society is speaking out against, you know, the police shooting up people left and right every other day. You know, they're just talking about, oh, but, you know, the communist-controlled UN is going to, you know, have a national police force in America.
Like, yeah, that's interesting. But you brought up John Singlaub. Unfortunately, I'm going to have to go here in a quick second, but I just want to bring this up because another book that I found really odd, really strange, I read it probably about 10 years ago. It's much older than that. I think it was put out in 1988, and it is a book called Shadows of Power. It is by James Perloff.
Mm.
And if you go through all that book, and it's a book on the Council on Foreign Relations. It's really detailed, really good book. Until you get to the very end of the book. And it starts talking about how great and wonderful it starts with a P. What was the guy's name was it Nicaragua? Who was the leader over there that they
Manuel
overthrew?
Noriega?
No, he's Panama.
Somoza?
Somoza, yes. Is that who the Sandinistas overthrew?
Yes.
Yeah, I can't remember all that stuff, but been a while since I looked at it. But yeah, that book is talking about how Somoza is this great, wonderful guy.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, so the John Birch Society puts out a book talking about how Somoza is this great and wonderful guy, and he was like a real conservative or something, like bizarre. Mm. And
one of Somoza's books is published by the JBS, their publishing group.
Oh, that's strange.
Oh no, it's like these you know, Austrian economists. The so-called libertarians that think that, you know, Pinochet was great because, you know, he let Hayek come in there and implement all sorts of things.
Right. Yes. Yeah, that's true. I guess we'd have to do a part two, because I actually have a copy of this, how many pages is this? This 713-page magnum opus called Radicals for Capitalism, A Freewheeling History of Modern American Libertarian Movement. It was a book published in 2012, and it's pretty much got like all sorts of crazy stories about libertarianism that I think would be a good thing to talk about in the future. Maybe we could do a separate thing on libertarianism just in general, because that was something I was infatuated with for quite a while.
And as was I.
Yeah, and it's interesting to know, I'll just say this on that note, that the libertarian economists, were you aware of this, Pierce? That the libertarian economists actually had their own secret society called the Mount Perlaine Society?
No.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, there is a libertarian secret society. Okay, I found out about this years ago. From Anton Chiatkin. I know he's kind of a questionable LaRouche guy, right? But then when I read, I found a book in a thrift store, of course. The book was called The Mount Perlaine Society, and it was like the whole description of this secret society that Henry Hazlitt, Murray Rothbard, Milton Friedman.
Really?
Yeah. You gotta go look that up. These guys had a secret society that they formed because they wanted to keep their, the ideas and all that stuff pure with, the idea of laissez-faire capitalism. So,
yet again, one of those things that, they don't talk about, Ron Paul forums or stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
Mises.
Gentlemen, unfortunately, I have to leave the conversation. I really want to stick around, but my daughter is probably tearing the curtains down right now. let me log off, and then if you guys want to reconnect separately.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah, man.
All right. Good talking to you, Pierce, and I look forward to hearing yours and Chris's conversation on the flip side.
Absolutely. Right.
Thanks, John.
All right, guys. Later.
Talk to you later.
Chris?
Hey, Pierce. Yeah, hey. I just connected right up that time.
Okay, yeah. Good. You know, I restarted my computer.
Oh, okay.
When we were talking, in the hopes that maybe that was... Skype is just a pain in the ass, to be honest.
Yeah, it probably has different effects on the different platforms and all that. And,
yeah, you can't really complain at a free product from Microsoft. You know, it's going to be
right.
Full of little issues.
Yeah, I was not too long ago. I was looking at the network traffic on my computer, and man, Skype is just chatting away on the internet all the time. Even when you're not connected, it's like, oh crap, what's going on? But you know, I don't stress about any of that.
The audio wasn't so bad on my end.
Oh, so it sounded like it was coming through pretty clear. Everything was...
Yeah, I put on some kind of nice, I had some fairly good earbud headphones with a little microphone on it. So Hopefully that'll kind of, a little bit at least.
Oh, yeah, it's always better, yeah.
Though, okay.
Yeah. So, okay, let's start it back up.
Chris?
And, yeah, can you hear me?
Did I just lose you?
I can hear you. Let's see. Maybe your audio speakers are...
Hello?
I hear you.
Can you hear me?
Let's see.
I don't know. I can't hear you if you can hear me right now.
Yeah.
Oh, no, wait. Yeah, I can hear you. Hold on one sec. Give me one sec here. There's something with my sound card. Oh. And sometimes it doesn't like when I put my headphones in.
Okay.
Which is what it's doing right now. So I'll just probably, I might have to keep them out.
Yeah, I don't hear any echo or anything.
Yeah, it's kind of annoying because, like, yeah, I don't know what the hell it is, but it doesn't like sometimes when I put my headphones in.
Yeah, probably switch it to your audio source or something.
Yeah, it's something. I think it's actually, I have Windows 10 installed on this, and apparently there's a bunch of weird sound card glitches or some sort of driver issue with Windows 10.
Oh, so maybe it automatically switches the driver?
It does something. It's like, sometimes it's totally fine. And then other times, like right now, I can't hear you when I plug in.
Hey, try this. If you plug in your headphones, maybe what it's doing is it's automatically switching your driver so that you need to go into the Skype preferences and select a new output source.
That's what I thought. Because what does it have it set to? Just speakers. Let's see. Let me try one thing, and then we can just start recording.
Okay.
Yeah, no, you know, it's like one of these things. I'll unplug it and plug it back in enough times, and then it just starts working. It's like, yeah, I don't know what it is. Yeah, they need some updates for Windows 10. But I'm good to go if you wanna get the conversation going again.
Yeah, you and John were talking about the secret society with what was it, Milton Friedman and
Mount Perlin Society. I just looked that up on Wikipedia. Bizarre, but doesn't at all surprise me. I mean, there's such a occult, alchemical thing going on with libertarianism.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
And I mean, we've talked about that a couple times, Chris, and the whole gold stuff, and I mean, all of the, you know, Ron Paul's whole thing is very Freemasonic, his whole, you know, career. So it doesn't surprise me at all. But it was interesting when John was talking about the Somoza stuff and these, you know, that's, it's, yeah, I mean, and that kind of leads into the white nationalist stuff that we're seeing. But yeah, I mean, it's this complete love of really brutal people if they're against this so-called, you know, evil thing, be it communism or, you know, right now it's this, you know, it's this international Jewish conspiracy.
Right. Yeah. It's the old dialectic process, you know, where, you know, you, oh, here's and then it's like everything can give something a definition of, oh, this is the evil empire or what have you, and then it's like, well, whatever means necessary to defeat them, so we got to be evil too if that's what it takes. And then it's like, oh, right. So you got people, the people being hit from both sides with the allowance for there being those total underhanded tactics. But see, both sides are controlled at the top by the same organization, you know. It's the same old story that takes all kinds of different forms, you know. I remember when I've listened to GCN Network for a long time when I was younger, and that's how I kind of, well, I, you know, I was getting into, I read some books, I was just, and then I came across Patriot Radio at the time that it was getting onto the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember, like, back then I would stream the stations through Real Media Player, and that was like, thing going. Oh, did you use that too?
Yeah, I just remember when the Real Media Player was something that, yeah, the people.
Yeah, that was the shit then. I mean, that was it.
Yeah, you know? Right, exactly.
You could stream audio, which was cool, and I was all into that. And then, you know, GCN was on, and I would listen to that all throughout the day and stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, whenever I was around the house or whatever, I'd have GCN Network going on, and then, you know, they're telling you about the New World Order. They're telling you about sometimes they go into communism, sometimes they go into that. But with the racism angle, I wanted to bring up something about that. Is that now that there's a resurgence of it, it has its foundations going back to the early days of this Patriot Radio. And I was going to go into a little bit about this article I found about it. This guy James Lloyd, I don't know if you heard of him, but
not sure.
Yes, he's talking about him. He came to limited national prominence during the time which could be called the heyday of alternative shortwave, which is 95 through 98. I think I was listening to, I started listening maybe around, 95. Yeah. And then on the coattails of Steve Quayle and an appearance of the Blueprint for Survival program, it was this period that the alternative shortwave radio began reaching out to a public audience, or domestic audience, rather.
Mm-hmm.
Many people who had become fed up with the controlled media had discovered shortwave radio, and shortwave radio had discovered them. And, you know, the CIA is, they have, what they call number stations, which are kind of these oddball kind of stations out there on shortwave where they send, you know, encrypted communications across, and that, you know, that was something that the CIA is heavily involved in, you know, maintaining those. And so they have always had kind of an interest in shortwave radio. And then, you know, so now that this Patriot movement starts up, and then, you know, so it gets its footing in shortwave radio, and then of course spreads out on the other platforms, you know, with like the internet and stuff later. But I just wanted to mention, when I was listening back then, you would have these references to a certain brand of Christianity, and one of the tenets of it is the sacred name. And you would hear the host, like if they were making a reference to God or something like that, they would always use a specific name like Yahweh, or referring to Jesus as Yahshua. Yeah. And that is, from what I understand, is a tenet of Christian identity.
Right, I was just going to say that, yeah.
Yeah, so Christian identity, from what I understand, is this doctrine that white folks, you know, naturally, are the true descendants of the 12 tribes of Israel, and the Jews aren't. The Jews are the counterfeit. You know,
right, the wicked,
the Ashkenazis, the usurpers, and they're the untrue Jews. The white folks are which also has interesting parallels to Mormonism. And yeah, it wasn't very overt though, but there was always those subtle references to it throughout a lot of the different programming that was on GCN. Now, I tend to think, like with this, that there's probably, you know, a good chance there's individuals that, you know, had shows on there that may not necessarily been in on the whole thing being a CIA operation or whatever it was. I'm not sure. I mean, how can you say for sure? But I definitely got the impression that there was a ideological undercurrent to, especially in terms of like religion and ideas about that. And then, yeah, it turns out it's what's called Christian identity.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't really know. I think a lot of people that subscribe to either the John Birch Society or that sort of right-wing Christian alternative radio, they're not even really aware of, I didn't know about the Council for National Policy until I saw Josh Reeves' film, The Secret Right. Uh-huh. And that's like, you know, that the think tank of think tanks, filled with all of the neocons, all of these JBS people different cults, associated with them. The big one being the Church Universal Triumphant cult, which has deep connections to the alternative media movement. I'm sure everyone is familiar with the, what's his name? He wrote Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler, Anthony Sutton.
Anthony Sutton, yeah.
All those videos of Anthony Sutton giving speeches, that's in front of a cult, the Church Universal Triumphant, Elizabeth Prophet.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. And Elizabeth Prophet was connected to the Council for National Policy through a bunch of different things. I got a book I found maybe a year or so ago called The Kors Connection, which is all about the Kors family. But there's a little footnote where they're talking about Elizabeth L. Prophet and how she was speaking at these CMP-funded group meetings and stuff like that, all about Star Wars and the apocalypse. And she very much fell into this sort of, apocalyptic worldview that a lot of these, Christian identity people also fall into. But yeah, I don't think they're necessarily aware all the time, because I think they would be shocked, but it is real. Look at the entire Oklahoma City bombing. Everyone within that was connected to either the FBI or the CIA. So I think it's real, but I think furthermore though, it's that, you know, you're saying, you're you'll be listening to this and it's everything is fine. And then all of a sudden you get this sort of, racial thing thrown at you or religious, sort of argument. And that's generally how they kind of sneak it in there. And they, they'll try their damnedest to be as intellectual as possible. John sent me the full David Duke Alex Jones quote debate, and I did suffer through 2 hours of that. The same thing where Duke gives this so called, and all the comments on YouTube, are this sort of, oh, Duke is so intelligent. It's like, no, he's not. I mean, he might have this sort of veneer of intelligence, but once you break past a couple of the words he looked up in the thesaurus just before the interview, everything is just Jew this, Jew that, the Jews right. control this. And it's really boring too. It's like right. nothing yeah. there. And the funniest thing about that entire thing was, all the comments are like, praising, quote, Dr. Duke, that's what we all have to call him now.
Yeah.
After he gets his PhD from a neo-Nazi university in Ukraine, which is, hilarious in and of itself, because obviously the right wing in Ukraine, these, the right sectors, Svoboda, all those groups are working for the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
That aside, it's all praising Dr. Duke. And then all the other comments are obviously talking about how, everyone knows, though, that Alex Jones is a, you know, a Zionist agent. Mm-hmm. You know, his wife is a Jew, so that means he's a Jew, and blah, blah, blah. You know, leaving aside the fact that that entire interview was just Alex Jones giving David Duke 2 hours to spout nonsense and hatred.
Yeah, and then you're listening to it, and you say, this can't possibly be the Alex Jones show, because he's not interjecting every 3 minutes, you know?
But that
was startling, just to listen to that alone, him not interrupting a guest. Mm-hmm. That's quite the rare bird there. And then, you know, I think you could get some better understanding of what you're listening to when you're hearing David Duke prattle on for, you know, however long he went on for, like, way more than any other guest I've ever heard. But anyway, yeah, so you if you could have a better understanding of who a large proportion of Alex Jones' listener base is. And he came out of GCN Radio, and this a lot of that their you know, core listeners are of this Christian identity, this racist Christian ideologies that are out there. And so when you hear something like that, because, you know, he's you know, Jones, of course, he's a showman, so, you know, he's got to broaden his appeal, but, you know, he's got to keep his base happy. And now that we're seeing this resurgence of these you know, racist ideologies, you know, now coming more to prominence in the alternative media, it's no surprise that you're going to find David Duke popping up.
For sure, yeah. I mean, that seems to be the new, you know, that's just the new normal now. All of the – and Duke is – I mean, I really didn't think – even a year or so ago – when this really started to become an issue, I didn't really ever imagine that it would come to the point where David Duke is, Dr. Duke is, I mean, he's on Red Ice, he's on Alex Jones, he's on, Mike Rivero's stuff. I mean, I think his show is still on the Jeff Rentz's network.
Oh, really? Yeah.
I believe so. But yeah, I mean, it's like, and now he's on CNN. I will say this. You know, God bless his soul, Bill O'Reilly had him on, and
really?
Bill O'Reilly, he made Bill O'Reilly look like a good person.
And
O'Reilly was actually, kept interrupting him as he's, you know, want to do. And, basically just, you know, yelling at David Duke to just tell, you know, to admit that he's a white supremacist.
Uh-huh.
You know, and then, you know, and this is this new thing, too, with this, you know, European identity politics and, you know, this white genocide and all this, you know, and now they're linking it again with these, you know, the refugee crisis in Syria. Also, I mean, the, you know, black, migrants that are, you know, coming into Italy and things like that. But, you know, again, it's also, it's Duke complaining about that. And it's like, A, you don't even live there. And B, the amount of them coming in is so minuscule compared to, you know, places like Turkey or Iraq or, Lebanon, where there's, I mean, thousands upon thousands of Syrian refugees. But the other thing, too, is, you know, they play up this white genocide. Everyone is against us, blah, 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 blah. But you never hear David Duke talk about NATO. You never really hear him talk about the CIA, anything like that, which is obviously the biggest murderer of people. And they're mostly, you know, aside from the Serbs, they're all, you know, non-white. You know, Duke will complain about the Palestinians, you know, or he'll use them as a, you know, an example, again, just using them, and mostly to be like, oh, and they're killing Christian Palestinians, you know. I don't think Duke really gives a shit about, you know, Muslim Palestinians, but, and this is creeping in more and more. And what's so funny, too, is that it's not just on the right, too. It's like the left is using the same sort of, you know, Zionist this. And it's really, I mean, it's just becoming, to me at least, so transparent that this is just, you know, typical old school racism. And it's unfortunate.
Well, this article I was referring to goes on, and I think this is a important point that's made in here. It was the time that the Patriot radios coming to prominence. It was 20 years after America's defeat by the communists in Vietnam. They were longing for a source of pride and for some substance on which we could hang our hopes for better things to come, and to legitimize our sense of outrage and resentment at being lied to and led down the primrose path to the second rate status in the world. It was the disaffected American Christian seeking a new hope for his cause, and the patriot seeking an outlet for his patriotism, weary with disgust and delusionment, who was ripe for this experience. So you have this undercurrent of sentiment that people are feeling, and then along comes Patriot Radio. And
yeah.
Right, and then introducing people to, like, oh, did you know that you're the true Jew?
And yeah.
So that's very interesting that I don't think most people are aware of, is that there's this ideology that's like the mirror image of the Jew, you know? So it's like, we're the true Jews, and so they take upon themselves the status of the Jew, and then all this stuff plays out, you know, with them the Christian identity identifying themselves as the true Jews, and then which is also a racist ideology, like, and then, you know, it's like, well, okay, if you're white, you're in. I don't know, did you did you run a blood test on that white dude? He may look white, but, you know, a lot of people, like, is, you know, one of your parents is a Jew, or one of your parents is black, or one of your parents is, but you don't express those genes, so you look white.
No, that's a great, no, exactly. I mean, and that's, once you start, you know, polishing, you know, getting rid of the veneer of this pseudo-intellectualism, I mean, it's just, it's all BS, you know what I mean? It's all, they want to be the superior, you know, group, these, whatever this European white nationalist, identity is. I guess what just worries me is it's now gaining such traction within all sorts of sectors. You know, it's like, you'll see if you watch, like, say, like Press TV, the Iranian state broadcaster, you'll see, communist, type political analysts, and they could be from, somewhere in, say, Nigeria or something like that. And they'll be talking about whatever, Boko Haram being, CIA puppet, something like that, or AFRICOM. And then, in the next segment, it's David Duke on talking about, oh, the Jews this, the Jews that, oh, I love the Palestinians all of a sudden. And both of them are kind of coalescing. And what's so shocking to me is just that there's really few and far between people are just saying this is crazy. This is insane. I mean, I'm sure you've seen the hollow hoax, and, no one really died in the Holocaust, and actually Hitler was kind of a good guy.
Yeah.
Or at the very least, he didn't really know what was going on, and, it's just it's all just a Jewish conspiracy.
Yeah.
There was never a conspiracy to commit genocide against a myriad of people, but instead, there was an even larger conspiracy on the half of the Western countries to make it look like the Germans were committing a conspiracy so that the Zionists could create Israel. And it's just like, once you start peeling that away, it's like, what is going on here? I don't know. It's kind of scary. I'm not really sure what to make of where this stuff is going. You get the David Duke type people who are real, he's a racist. There's really no way around that. But then you get the Alex Jones, the sort of the actors of the world that are able to poke and prod people. Cause that's what I mean. He'll, like, in that Duke interview, he looks so-called, moderate, you know what I mean? But, he's the same person complaining about Mexican immigrants all the time. You know, he's you know, he'll say these wild things about, oh, they're all actually, you know, drug dealers or MS-13 gang members that are coming in, you know, blah, blah, blah. So he's feeding into this as well. And it's really startling that people don't see this. These quote unquote awake people don't see it. And again, then you go another level and you see that, you know, the intelligence, you know, agencies like the CIA or the FBI or things like that, they're controlling so many of these alternative, news outlets. And, you know, you're talking about GCN. There's the whole theory that, Adnan Khashoggi, you know, is the man putting up the money for GCN.
Okay.
Which on face value might be like, that's kind of crazy, but there's a whole thing about which Khashoggi did fund Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus.
Okay.
That book by John Gray. And then John Gray, of course, went on to be a 9/11 truther. And there's a whole bunch of evidence that some of these early 9/11 conferences were actually funded by a company that Khashoggi owned.
Oh, really?
And Alex Jones, he's addressed the Adnan Khashoggi thing. And in one of them, it's in The Secret Right. And he's like, you know, well, you know, I already, you know, some Khashoggi guy, I don't even know. And it's like, you don't know who Adnan Khashoggi is. I mean, then you're not really a truth teller if you don't know who, you know, the most famous arms dealer, international, you know, fixer, drug lord, you know, Saudi connected guy is. Then, I mean, he is, you know, he's at the middle of Iran-Contra.
Uh-huh.
That's what I mean. You know, you start kind of peeling this back and you start to see that, you know, from the very beginning, the powers that be knew the power of the alternative media, so they wanted to absolutely control it.
Right.
And again, you know, what's so funny, you know, is too, like, you know, one of the things that I was always really interested in, even before 9/11, two things. One was Iran-Contra, and the other was the Oklahoma City bombing. But, you know, you'll see a lot of people in the Patriot movement pointing to OKC, rightfully so, that, you know, there was some sort of plot here or something like that. But at the same time, they'll also kind of be like, you know, defending these groups as well.
Right.
And it's like these white nationalist groups that, you know, bombed out a daycare center, it's kind of okay? And that's that weird sort of thing that's going on there. And again, I mean, you know, I think that they were using a lot of people. There were a lot of people in these groups. They might have been racists or bigots or something like that, but they were never really going to hurt anyone. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that is horrible. But again, you know, you also see these people kind of defending them a little bit. And again, who's in the middle of this? Andre Strassmeyer, who was, I mean, out was a Nazi. I mean, he like openly was a Nazi. And you know, these guys are kind of defending that. So it's I don't know, it's odd and it's really troubling. And it's reaching a moment right now where it's, I don't know. It's becoming more and more mainstream, and it's dangerous.
I agree. I mean, now another thing too, David Duke, he's addressing some legitimate concerns. I don't think that, you know, his message is without some kind of merit to it on, in some respects. You know, I've been firsthand witness to a lot of where, you know, areas around the country, you know, all around the country, different cities and stuff, like they have like communities that have pretty much turned entirely over to like you know, being Hispanic or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you're seeing this sort of like slow motion invasion happening in front of your eyes. I mean, I've been to cities in one time in 2003, I went to the Appalachian Trail. And there was the city where I went to go get on the bus. It was in Georgia, And I did not see a single white person. It was completely Hispanic. And so that is now a common thing for, you know, American cities to almost be entirely Hispanic or have a very prominent Hispanic presence. So, yeah, that is something I know that people are taking notice of, and nobody's really talking too much about it other than, you know, to couch it within some sort of like, oh, well, you bring it up, you're a racist. But, you know, it's, you know, the total transformation in front of your very eyes of the way it, you know, which for myself, it doesn't disturb me, but like, I know for a lot of people, it's got to, you know, be driving them crazy. And, but you know, when I say a legitimate concern, I mean something that is referencing something that is actually taking place that people are definitely noticing and becoming very alarmed by. And, you know, it's this, yeah, basically a slow motion sort of progressive invasion, you know, that that is, you know, not really actually being addressed, you know.
Well, no, I mean, I know exactly what you're saying, and I think it is a real thing, you know. My father, for instance, is emigrated to America from Ireland in the 50s, you know, he was back in Ireland. This was many years ago, but you know, I don't know, mid 2000s or something like that, and he was you know, shocked at, you know, the amount of, you know, suddenly there was like a, you know, African restaurants, there was, you know, Chinese places everywhere, burritos, you know, all, you know, this whole influx of people. And he was like, you know, it was completely different. And he was kind of like, you know, a little bummed out, I guess. Yeah, so I think there is something there. And, you know, you were saying, you know, it's not really being addressed. The only way it is being addressed is in this, like, just overt racist, we should just get rid of all of them.
Exactly. But, you know, something, too, I'll interject here is that the Hispanics themselves are pretty racist, man. I mean, I lived in a Hispanic neighborhood, or it wasn't necessarily a Hispanic neighborhood, but it had a very noticeable Hispanic presence there in this city of Wichita Falls. I used to live for a couple of years in Texas, and I would notice that, like, I would get jeers walking down the street. You know how you yell at you or whistle or something like that, so that, you know, you don't feel quite comfortable. They really don't like blacks in the neighborhood. So I had a black neighbor that I would talk to from time to time. I'd see him out, you know, taking out his trash. I'd say, hey, what's going on? And he had his wife is white. And so I would, you know, strike up a conversation with him on different occasions. And he was getting relentlessly harassed by his Hispanic neighbors. They would rob his – they said, they've robbed my house at least more than a dozen times within the last, like, year. And it's just a relentless – harassment of the man. And I was just, man, I really wasn't. See, now this is going on and not being discussed too, is this very overt sort of just racism from you know, Hispanics against blacks, you know. That never gets mentioned. There's a lot of stuff that's going on in this country right now that never gets mentioned. And but, you know, I'm sure that's not an isolated case, because it's like there was no real, that I was aware of, any kind of actual background between, just other than the fact that he was black and that they were, it was predominantly Hispanic neighborhood to a large degree. And it gave every appearance to me as if they were in the process of driving him out. And I don't think they were necessarily hard on me, because I could maybe be halfway mistaken for somebody that has a mix of some kind of ethnicity or something like that. So I was maybe in relative terms left alone, but Yeah, that that's going on all over the place, man.
Well, I mean, to just, you know, go back to the sort of the root of this is just that, I mean, America is still a deeply racist place, you know, towards everybody. Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's a hate film, and it's not even just race. I mean, it's, you see the same, you know, there's this Jewish gay agenda going on, and, you know, the secret, you know, homosexual this and that, and that it's all a big conspiracy, blah blah, they're putting stuff in our food, and I understand some of the stuff behind that, there is a lot of endocrine disruptors putting plastic and things like that, but we're just still this sort of hate filled country, and that's not being addressed, and it's only being addressed these super extreme sort of ways.
Right.
And pick on David Duke some more, when he does address, he'll address that, but it's always, he'll say something like, yeah, well, Hispanics don't like African Americans or something like that. But he'll portray himself as just, he's totally fine. You know, like that there's no, that white people aren't racist or something like that. But yeah, I mean, I think this all goes to this deeper sort of issue that there is still a huge racial problem. There's still just a hate problem in America.
Mm-hmm.
And coming from all
directions, from
exactly, you
know, Hispanic from communities,
left, the right,
from the left,
rich,
the right,
poor.
Yeah, rich, poor.
Yeah, no, and it's like that's not okay to talk about anymore. You know, it's like if you do talk about, you know, if you say there's a race problem or racism is an issue, there's still, it's a hate-filled place. Oh, what are you, you're some sort of, you know, cultural Marxist or something like that, you know?
Right.
You know, it's not cool to talk about that. Whereas at the same time, you know, those people calling you a cultural Marxist are the ones that are bitching the most. You know, about how, oh, they're going to, you know, genocide all of the European Americans or something like that. You can look at places like Europe right now where you actually just have, I mean, out and out Nazi parties coming, you know, winning elections, winning, you know, seats in parliament, and this sort of this super, you know, reactionary response where, like, there, you know, you see these people in the alt media defending groups like Golden Dawn in Greece or some of these other, like, I mean, neo-Nazi supporting groups. And then, you know, at the same time, they will be going on and on about how Ukraine is, you know, it's this Western plot to destroy the wonderful Putin and Russia, which is, you know, can do no wrong, and it's like those people that are doing that right now are these Nazi groups.
Yeah, I want to talk. You know, I want to bring something up about that. These Nazi groups are fired up, you know, and so there's this thing called, you know, Holocaust denial. You know, you touched on that. Bring up the Holo-hoax and all that. And I myself personally, I've looked into a lot of that material that is debunking the Holocaust. And I'll have to say that as far as the evidence that comes from officialdom that supports it, but this aspect of it, the idea, which is the, I think, central, you know, premise of the whole thing about the Nazis and with the eradication of the Jews, is that, you know, they, you know, systematically set up these, you know, death camps, as they're called, like Auschwitz, Dachau, all those different ones, with the express purpose of systematically eradicating people with, you know, gas, you know, you've heard the story, gas chambers and crematoriums and all that stuff. But if you look at the, you know, quote unquote evidence, I mean, just from official sources, and then, you know, some of the, like, analysis of that, and it's like, okay, for this to be a death camp, It is not set up to be a death camp. And we're talking about Germans, some of the best engineers. You know, they have a reputation for being engineering adept, you know, like we're... But, you know, if to build a death camp like that with the purpose in mind of what we're always told, what they were for. And I'm not saying that nobody died in the camps or whatever. I think there was typhoid outbreaks that were being addressed, but different things. And then, yeah, with that wiped out a whole bunch of people. And I think that, you know, that might have been part of it, an agenda. But then, you know, it comes to find out, like, the German soldiers and stuff were dying, too, because typhoid is spreading, and they were really working hard to eradicate it. You know, that's why they shave their heads. You know, why do you go through the trouble to shave heads if you're going to go ahead and put them in a gas chamber right after? That doesn't make any sense. And then, you know, they say, oh, here's the piles of shoes. That's proof of all these people dying. But, you know, they do that today. If you go to jail or something like that, you don't get to wear your shoes in jail, you know, because they're addressing the parasite problem. You know, so if you're going to go ahead and take these people and incinerate them into ashes, why would you carry out all these protocols that are, you know, dealing with lice and stuff like that? That doesn't make any sense. So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff to back up the, you know, quote unquote hot Holocaust deniers. But why I'm bringing this up is that, you know, I think this is understood throughout, you know, like the German nationalists and those people, and they've been made the villain. I mean, our History Channel in the United States, we get heavily bombarded. It's just mainly dealing with the, you know, atrocities of World War II. Hitler, you know, they call it the Hitler Channel because it's so much of that material on it. And I think what that has done, it's set the stage for what we're seeing now, so that, you know, people have looked into it and they're convinced, okay, that's not what the Germans were doing. And you know, they're Germans and they identify with that and see that, you know, injustice being carried out and it being covered up and it being continually perpetuated. And yeah, it's galvanizing them to, you know, help them take the position that they're taking. You know, that's the way I look at that. You know, I haven't seen, you know, they say they eradicated 6 million Jews, and then, you know, that figure changes all the time. There's just, it's so problematic, you know, like what is the true evidentiary basis for the, you know, quote unquote Holocaust? And I think, like, all the evidence is very, very dubious myself. Does that make me a Hitler lover? No.
Well, that's one of the cruxes of this whole thing, is that they are, you know, denying that it took place, or they're, you know, they'll come up with some sort of, I mean, I was recently on one of these sites, and I mean, they had this whole thing about how, you know, oh, they were really helping them, that they were going to, like, relocate them. And then it's like, but there was no one got relocated. You know, so all those people that went in, they never came back out. But leaving that aside, I think it becomes this sort of this weird issue. And I just saw this recently, where it becomes this argument about, well, Hitler didn't know. You know, Himmler and some of these other, you know, lunatics, they knew what was going on. But Hitler was good. You know, he really, you know, he was just misunderstood. You know, he was just a painter who, you know, really meant well. So then that, you know, that's what it becomes then, is this sort of, but Hitler was okay, because again, he was fighting the New World Order, you know, he was against the, Jewish reptilian conspiracy that wants, you know, whatever the hell that is, or, you know what I mean? Like, that's what it becomes. And it's like, so this black magic, dark occultist, fringe group that rose to be, you know, this, again, it represents everything they're against. You know, I mean, talk about statism. Yeah. I mean, you know, the whole country. And then also at the same time, you know, it's like a post-World War II, that's, you know, that's what the CIA is doing. They're picking up all the Nazis. And they don't seem to see any problem with that either.
Yeah, what do you mean, like Project Paperclip, where they allegedly shipped a bunch of Nazis over here to work in the laboratories in the state.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I mean. They won't mention that in, you know, that's the, again, and I think it's because, honestly, they really don't care. They sort of like those groups. They're fine. And that historically, yeah, that makes sense because it's all of these far-right fascist groups that were working with, you know, the Central Intelligence Agency or NATO or things like that. That's like what the whole Gladio network is.
Yeah, and then you got to ignore the eugenics programs that were taking place here in the United States. And then, Hitler, Time Magazine's Man of the Year. You know,
yeah, exactly. Kind of stuff. Yeah. Well, and that's what, yeah, and it's just this sort of this, like, crazy logic where it becomes this, you know, Hitler was good, he was an okay guy, you know, don't worry about it, you know, just get on with your day. I don't know. I mean, it's that weird, this weird new trajectory that so many of these media outlets are getting into. You know, and again, this is partly what sort of Josh Reeves in The Secret Right talks about is that, you know, by allowing yourself to get sucked into that, that mindset that, you know, oh, Hitler was great, the Jews control everything, you know, holla hoax, this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
You're ultimately setting yourself up to be the victims of the very same thing that you claim is, you know, it's so horrible. So it's like, you know, when the FEMA camps start up, you're who they're going to be going after, you know, because you're going to be this, you know, the great, just great justification, you know, because the people at the very top, while that, yes, they are, you know, neocons or whatever, they're crazy. I mean, they're not politically, they're not like you at all, you know, and that's, you're the excellent group that they're going to pick up on. So that's another really powerful thing. You know, I really can't recommend enough Josh Reeves' The Secret Right. And he also gets into Jones and Ron Paul and all those other things. But it's an amazing movie. And Josh Reeves is by all, you know, he is a conservative. So.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. It's not like some, you know, I don't know, liberal sort of thing. He's definitely, but he's just saying, you know, it's, you know, you're complete, you know, you're buying this whole, you know, Alex Jones talking about FEMA camps. But, you know, in reality, you're fulfilling all of the requirements to get into those FEMA camps, and you don't even realize it. And that's really scary. And that's, again, the power that these alt media figures have to kind of take these people and, again, insert these outrageous ideas, you know, into this. And again, and just sort of like, you know, so, okay, the Nazis are okay, and then they all go and work for the CIA, and, you know, the CIA is creating people like Timothy McVeigh, you know, are using him to then commit these horrific acts alongside a whole bunch of other CIA people. And then, you know, they turn around and they start cracking down on all of these patriot people. So it's this crazy game that's being played right now. And I don't, you know, and I think so many of these people fall into this, like, oh, this is, you know, this is the most alternative. You know, it's like once you get into the alt media, suddenly everything, you know, you have to have an alternative view on every single issue in the world, you know.
Yeah.
So then that turns into, you know, no one died during World War II, or, you know, Hitler was real, you know, really. And it's like, yeah, I totally understand that. You know, I mean, talk about the, you know, the firebombing of Dresden, the firebombing of Tokyo,
right? And then
all,
like,
of these horrific things.
Are those, because you get this word thrown out there, atrocity, war atrocity, and stuff like that? I mean, that's pretty severe. I mean, bombing the just daylights out of a city or something like that, and that was the Allies. You know, they just bombing the crap out of everything, bombing the crap out of Japan, but you know, that's just what you do in war. But then over here in this other category, if you're killing people a different way, and that's the whole Holocaust thing. It's like, oh, they killed them in the oven, so that instead of burning you alive inside your house,
they take you
and burn you in an oven, and that's somehow an atrocity. But we go ahead and roast you alive. I guess is that the benefit? So you have the you're in the comfort of your home. Maybe you're sipping some iced tea. Here comes an incendiary bomb, and you're roasted alive. And then, well, at least, you know, the Allies didn't cart you off to a different place to have it done. And that and that makes it see, I mean, there is no really kind of logical there is no logical context for these type of discussions. It's not ever framed into any kind of real dealing with the reality of what war is and all that. It's like that it's all atrocity. I mean, you could just categorize something else as being an atrocity, vilify, create a, this eternal villain class that you can just harp on and then have the name Hitler synonymous with evil. And I don't buy into any of that garbage. But with that said, I'm not saying Hitler was good. It's this like absolutist fallacy that I think people like readily kind of, fall into is that, well, if you don't accept, this and this and that out of officialdom, like I've been going with these ongoing debates with atheists and stuff like that, and then so it's like, so if I don't accept their premise and I'm questioning the foundational premise that their claims is based on, then therefore I must be a hater of science. Like I don't believe in any science. I shouldn't even be driving a car. That kind of absolutism, logically, it's basically a straw man so that you misrepresent the opponent so that you can create a straw man based on it and then to try to make their argument look absurd by, including a bunch of stuff that I didn't, that aren't even included in my arguments at all. So it's like that that's why, when I do my calls and I do, videos and stuff like that. I always try to kind of keep in mind the, what are logically fallacious arguments and what are not. And that I think that's an important people to have critical thinking skills and to be able to analyze this stuff,
No, on that sort of absolutism, I do agree with you. All war is a crime. There's not really, you can't, and comparing one atrocity, it's like, well, was Pol Pot kind of better because he, he didn't kill as many people as Mao, but what if, is Stalin really the worst? And it's like, no, I mean, any sort of genocidal act, any sort of mass murder, on an industrial scale, you can't really start comparing, well, this guy was better, this guy was bad. But that's what's funny because that, these sort of neo-Nazi, crypto-fascist people, they'll play that, they'll be like, well, no one's looking at, the atrocities of the communists. And that's true. Like you said, on the History Channel, you never really hear about what Stalin was doing or, no one really, Mao is, there's still people, I have people on Twitter tweeting me with, they're talking about how they're self-professed Maoists and it's like, what are you, fucking insane? Why would you ever want to be like that guy? But, but at the same time, they'll then play this crazy logic where, I think it was in the Alex Jones, David Duke thing where, Alex brings up, oh, well, what about, the collaboration of, big business and the Nazis, big business in the U.S. and Nazis and, oh, well, that never happened, because again, Duke has got to play up this, I'm a populist, I don't like the big business class. He's just lying, then again, what happens is it turns into this again. No, Hitler was good because he was against the bankers and all that sort of stuff. And then even when they talk about the, he'll be, oh, but what about the communists? The communists. It's like, okay, let's talk about the communists. But then it just whoop, turns around into, and obviously, all of the people committing this slaughter were Jews. They were the, Jewish communists. They don't actually, they don't really believe in that whole, all war is horrible, the West and the, the Axis, they were both evil. They're only buying into this, the West was really horrible and, everyone else was good. And it's just crazy. And again, and people, I think they get into that mindset where they're like, oh, I want to hear about the other side. And that's a good thing. We should. But then they're manipulated and molded into this sort of crazy view where, again, You know, Hitler was great. There was no, you know, there, it wasn't, oh, I mean, you know, look at the British royal family. I mean, first off, they're all German. You know, they're not even really British. They're all Prussian. And they loved Hitler. But you won't hear that coming from these neo-Nazi groups, you know? You know, that's nowhere to be found. The same thing. I mean, you know, there's no talk about the, you know, that, the Allies were bombing cities. And, you know, the only places in the cities they didn't bomb were the American-owned, you know, companies that were still operating in Germany. Because that never happened, because Hitler was really against the New World Order and against the bankers. Or he didn't really know what was going on. So it's like, you know, talk about a hoax. I mean, these people are being... I don't know. It's just crazy. I guess what bums me out too, I'll say this, Chris, is that like I didn't, you know, I got into this whole alt media, or at least producing alt media, not that long ago. And already I've just seen a crazy mark change from when I got in. And it seems like it's degrading more and more to the point where you just have, I mean, complete lunatics, psychopaths, true psychopaths. You know, I had some idiot, emailing me to be on my show, you know, and he had listened to an episode I did on this pedophile Jeffrey Epstein, and then, you know, somehow thought that because I did an episode on Epstein that I would love to have him on so he could basically tell me how no one died during the Holocaust. And, you know, so he could promote his idiotic article that was in the Barnes Review, which is, you know, just a Holocaust denying journal. And again, you know, who was a part of the Barnes Review or whatever the hell it's called was Willis Carto, who was head of the Liberty Lobby. Mm-hmm. And the Liberty Lobby was defended by Mark Lane, who was Jim Jones's lawyer. So the CIA, you know, and Mark Lane is always a bit, you know, he was the first JFK conspiracy theorist. So again, all of these groups are, you know, in the background, you have these major CIA people manipulating in the background. So, it's really like, what is going on here? It's a crazy reality that these people don't even realize, you know? And they'll promote these people that were willingly working with CIA, you know, agent provocateurs or informants or stuff like that. And they just seem to have no idea, or they don't care.
Well, that's how our mythologies are established through these intelligence agencies and all of that. And, yeah, one thing about it too is if you look at some material that's out there, I don't know, there's some stuff that's mentioned in some of like Fletcher Prouty, and he's a dubious character in and of himself, but right, yeah, and then he makes mention of how the CIA in some coups that were taking place in South America and stuff like that. He relates accounts of them putting on street theater so that, it's about perception management, psychological warfare. You know, if you create oppression in somebody's mind that something's going on, I mean, that's all really needs to take place. But yeah, they would engage in mock battles, people fall out on the street, appearing to die. And then later when the smoke clears and kind of, they pick up the body, they throw in the truck, they drive out of sight, and then they all go have some beers, you know, and it's like good times, you know, and CIA's been doing this, man, for, you know, I think since their inception.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think there's this sort of kind of idea that is, you know, everything that we're told is, you know, based upon some true to life event. It's just what, and then we're asked, okay, what side of the fence do you come down on? And then it's the initial premise never gets examined. It's like, okay, did that even happen in the first place? And I think a lot of people have a lot of trouble with that because they've never kind of been in contact with all these different bits of circumstantial evidence that are kind of floating around there that kind of points in the same direction of, like, a lot of stuff being just completely stage-managed, stagecraft. And, you know, I talk about that a lot, and it I think it bothers a lot of people because they'll retort with, well, you know, you're one of those guys that think everything is fake, and it's like, well, no, that's the you're making a straw man argument again, and you're trying to mischaracterize me as the everything is fake crowd. But what I've tried to do is point out that whatever that we're told, you know, and it comes from an official source, no matter how many you think eyewitnesses or whatever were to it, you know, because, like, you know, if you don't know and you weren't there, you keep in mind, too, that you could pay anybody to say anything on film. I mean, I don't know why that's so hard for somebody to understand. Mm-hmm. And then you have a documented record of an eyewitness, and then, but... evidentiary records are, if you have the mechanism of officialdom at your disposal, you could create whatever record that you want, and it goes into the history book. And then once that happens, it's established as fact. And I think that that's missed out on a lot of people. But I think some of the way around it, the only true way around it is, you know, you take each individual claim. And you could do your analysis on it individually and say, okay, does this shit line up? Does this make any sense? And then if it doesn't, you may be able to confidently draw the conclusion that maybe that didn't even happen. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like maybe that, you know, the reason why I believe it and many, many other people believe it is because we just assume that all this stuff has been checked out, because it couldn't possibly be around out there without somebody checking it out. So it's really based on this presupposition that, you know, and I think it goes to what a lot of people refer to in certain other arenas as quote-unquote peer review. Mm. Like, okay, so a scientific paper gets published and it's out there, and so therefore it must be legitimate because somebody would have found it out by now if it wasn't. But that brings with it so many presuppositions, it's ridiculous. Like, okay, what exactly are you talking about when you're talking about an expert? What are you talking about when you're talking about a peer? And those things are never defined. So it's like, yeah, and we don't even have the language to articulate any of this stuff. Or, I mean, we do, but we don't use it. So, and it's left out of these discussions that often get brought up. So, yeah, there's all that. You know, it's like questioning the underlying premises of any claim, I think, is something that is a lot of the talk radio, a lot of alternative media and stuff like that is deficit, man. They're really deficit in that. And what people are, I think, prone to do is, you know, you start with a jumping off point, and which is the unexamined premise, and just go from there. And start to formulate a line of reasoning argumentation based on your unfounded premise, you know. And it's like that is something I think that we have to address.
Yeah, oh, and I think there's also just the problem with the alternative media is, I mean, there's just no one actually does no one really does investigations anymore.
Yeah, you know? It's, I mean, just pick up the freaking phone, you know.
Yeah, let's just follow it. This is the thing. Okay, you know, this is trending, you know, on whatever, above top secret or something like that. So this is what we're all going to do. You know, I mean, InfoWars or Global Research, you know, they're famous for that. I mean, they'll just print anything. They don't even, you know, remotely care what it is. And then they won't reprint retractions. You know, they won't say, oh, we screwed up on that. Sorry. You know, instead they'll just sort of go with whatever. And that's just a big problem throughout the alternative media right now. But I think that's how a lot of, you know, the more insane things get out there.
There's this presupposition, too. I think that addresses what I just got through talking about with this quote unquote peer review. I know that there's a specific classification that deals with, you know, scientific published papers and journals and stuff like that, but it's also something that you could carry, the basic premise of it, you could carry on into any other kind of arena. Just like, you know, like you talk about with Alex Jones, he snatches a news article, he reads it, he doesn't check his sources, he doesn't check his, or anything like that. And then, like, did anybody check the sources on this anywhere in the chain? It's like, how do you know? You know, it's like, so bringing out so many news articles that, his shotgun approach, where it's like, I'm just going to just shotgun this stuff out there. It's like, yeah, how can you frame that within some kind of a workable a way to figure out what's really going on? You can't, unless you want to go take each individual article and go do your own digging on it and do your own, which nobody's going to do.
No, I know. It's pretty pathetic. And these people call themselves truthers. I mean, that's why the term truther has become a joke. I mean, there's nothing. People just don't even, it just turns into this screaming match. I mean, like I was saying, like, we don't agree on everything, but it doesn't devolve into this, like, you know, argument necessarily. Furthermore, I think it's just that, the real thing for me is just that, you know, what I see more and more of this sort of stuff is that you're getting this just sort of crappier and crappier level of discourse in the alternative media.
Yeah.
And more of this white nationalist, you know, crypto fascism popping up among, and it's, like I said at the beginning, it's not just the right, because you're getting so many, you know, so many of these so-called, pro-Palestinian Twitter activists, and I get attacked by them all the time. If you just take the word Zionist out and put in Jew, they sound just like David Duke. It's the same thing. I mean, they're falling for this same sort of stuff. I mean, the entire BDS, boycott, divestment, sanction movement has become this, I mean, pathetic shell of what it could have been, where everyone is accusing someone else of being a Zionist spy, or they're accusing them of secretly loving the Zionists. And that they don't hate the Israelis enough. It's on both sides, and if you can't wake up and smell the, you know, what's really going on, I hate to say it, but I don't really see much hope for the alternative media in the near future. I think there's obviously going to be some people that genuinely care and they want to do some sort of stuff, but when it just becomes this sort of barely doing any sort of research, if they even do research, but basically, you know, just retweeting stuff on Twitter and then bitching about Jews and, you know, Mexicans and homosexuals and basically everybody, you know, then that's it. I mean, there's nothing else to talk about, you know, it just seems so deliberate and so much like a CIA or intelligence operation. And these people are just completely in the dark about it. It's just wild. I don't know. It's really, really wild. And it's like on all sides. I mean, I'm constantly having to, stop defend myself against these Twitter activists who, and I'll say this right now, I've been to both Israel and to Palestine, and I would challenge any of these little churds attacking me on Twitter. I mean, have you ever even been to these places? You know?
Mm-hmm. What is your take on it from your firsthand perspective there?
Well, I mean, I think that I was much more deeply involved in it, you know, several years ago. Mm-hmm. And I think that Palestine was stolen. There's really no denying that at all. It is a form of brutal apartheid. the level of open racism in Israel is shocking. You would not, I mean, people like my age, you know, I must have been, I don't know, 22, 23 when I was there. You know, so, you know, young hipster type people.
Right.
You know, just regular people. I mean, the stuff that came out of their mouths, if they were saying this about Hispanics or, you know, blacks or any minority group, I mean, you would not want to associate yourself with them. But they, you know, really, I mean, truly horrible stuff.
Mm-hmm.
On the flip side of that, I met, you know, people that, were just sort of regular Israelis, or regular people, you know, that didn't really necessarily harbor racism or anything like that, that they saw this as a problem. But those people, of course, don't really exist in the minds of these anti-Zionists.
Right.
You know, because unless you basically hate Zionism and hate Judaism, then you're not really a good Israeli. But I'll say this, I find that and it's really, really sad. I've talked about this before with some of my friends. I don't really care anymore. It's become such an issue that it's just not even worth talking about. And I find that most of the people that are making the biggest amount of noise are these, you know, quote, anti-Zionist, pro-Palestinian, you know, anti-neocon, anti-war Twitter activists that spend all of their time retweeting horrific photos of dead Palestinian children.
Mm.
And I don't really want to look at that. I know, you know, there's not that trigger in my brain that releases endorphins every time I see a dead child, which unfortunately is how I see a lot of these people. That's how they view this. I don't need to see what white phosphorus does to a 3-year-old Palestinian girl. I know what it does, and it's really horrific, but I don't need to be, you know, that doesn't need to be drilled into my head. And unfortunately, I think that for a lot of these people, they're also using the Palestinians yet again, like all people do, use the Palestinians because they really truly just don't like Jews, or they think that Jews are the real problem. So I hate to say it, but I just kind of ignore it. It's just there's no real solution from any of these groups. You know, if your best bet is Hamas, forget it. It's not going to happen. You know, that can't be the solution. You know, at the same time, I feel like, you know, if I was Palestinian, I probably would join Hamas. It makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I've kind of given up. It's also, you know, and it sounds flippant, but, you know, there's other atrocities going on in the world.
Yeah, that's a topic that seems to really push certain people's buttons, you know, especially like on have you ever seen the documentary Pallywood?
No.
Yeah, you got to check that out, dude. You know, and here we go again with, okay, you're an everything is faker. You know, I you know, maybe here's certain people out there maybe that's running across this. And, I mean, clear evidence of just staging conflicts between, you know, what is represented as Palestinian people and the Israeli troops and, clearly fake and staged. I mean, there's no denying fake and staged. I mean, they're just kind of really not being too candid about it. Because, you know, you go into post and you clip out what you want and you piece it together, you put it on the news, and it's like, okay, here's this, that, and other thing, and, yeah, here's the Palestinians and the, you know, Israelis fighting again, and it's like, well, hell no, they weren't fighting, they were doing a street theater production. And you just have to watch it and then draw your own conclusions, but... Does that mean I'm saying that everything that all the issues that are going on with the Palestinians and the Israelis that none of that has any foundation, any kind of real sentiments that are on both sides? I mean, not saying that, but you know, what's going on with this faking of the news in relation to that? And then how much, you know, if we get a if we get a picture of a child that looks like it was burned alive with an incendiary bomb, what are we really looking at? Or where did it come from? Do we source it? Do we find out? Do we track it down? Is there really a practical way to even do that? Or is it something that, because what you're telling me is like, you're addressing this issue of there's a contingent within this country that is very emotionally impacted by what you just got to describe, and so I'm just thinking psychological operation, man. That's how I see things. That's how I look at the world now, you know. But then it's like, I don't know. I wasn't there, though. Yeah, I've I haven't been to Israel, so.
I mean, that's the biggest. The people making the most noise have never been to either place, and and actually met a Palestinian person, met an Israeli. And again, I mean, this isn't to defend one side over the other. It's just I mean, it's now. I mean, to the point where it just basically, unless you hate Zionism in all of its forms, which again many times is just code word for Jew. Then you don't really love the Palestinians. And again, it's so many of these people that are obsessed with showing and passing photos around of dead children. And it's like, you know, are you, I can only imagine, I mean, some of these people are getting off on it in some weird, sick, twisted way. You know, this is their form of resistance, is, you know, showing, you know, mutilated children the way, a pedophile would do the same thing. And so many of them are the same people that are, you know, into or they believe that they're, you know, they're exposing the big pedophile rings. And it's you're not really investigating any of these, like Jeffrey Epstein or Jimmy Savile. You're just getting off on more and more salacious details and exploiting children that have already suffered. I don't understand how that's, you know. I don't know. And of course, they don't really offer any real solution other than destroy the Zionists. That's not really a solution. That's just not going to happen anytime soon. And again, if they'll prop up, you know, oh, well, you know, the Iran backs the Palestinians, so that means that everything Iran does is good. You know, this group likes them, so everything they do is totally fine. That's not, you know, I mean, they're playing the same game that, you know, the people that really rule this world want you to play. And again, they won't go any deeper into certain issues. You know, they all think that, like, the Mavi Marmara attack was, you know, this horrible thing, and, you know, these dickheads like Ken O'Keefe will go on and spew a bunch of nonsense. And whereas if you start looking into the Mavi Marmara attack, you can see that the whole thing was being orchestrated from the very beginning by Mossad and Turkish intelligence, and that was all a plan.
Have you seen some of the stuff out there that is critical of that whole Iron Dome stuff? I mean, dude, it is absolutely ridiculous. It's like, it is so incredibly fake. And it's supposedly the Hamas firing missiles into Israel. And, you got to look at that stuff too, man.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, of course. Retarded, right. Yeah. No. The Iron Dome is a complete, it doesn't do anything.
No, it's an absolute farce, man. I mean,
Well, and it's an absolute farce, too, that any of the weapons that Hamas fires could do any damage. They're bottle rockets.
So what else about it is, you know, a complete farce? And then, you know, it's almost like now, well, it's like I talk about a lot. It's like something becomes an industry. Something becomes, and now it's almost like kind of just a byword, a brand or something like that. The Palestinian struggle or trademark, you know, put a TM at the end of it or a registered mark on at the end of it. And it's this cause celeb thing. That, what you described, I've seen the same thing too. It just gets people so incredibly fired up And it's like,
well, that's how people make their whole careers. You know, you can make an entire career in the alternative media, getting paid, I would assume, somewhat well, writing the same freaking article over and over again. And all you're really doing is just exploiting the Palestinians like they've been exploited, you know?
Yeah, here's another thing, too. It's this prospect that you have these people. I'm not saying they're not at odds, but and you described there's like a lot of racist, very virulent racist sentiment and stuff like that, and I don't deny it. But the idea that there's these people living in these close quarters like that are at perpetual, constant, blood-boiling conflict with each other, I don't believe that humans actually function that way. I think what probably, to a large degree, has happened is that, okay, you settle into a routine, just like everybody else in the world does. Your captors or whatever, become familiarized with them, seeing them every day. Oh, and then you notice, so there he is behind the bush taking a crap. Oh, he's an Israeli soldier. Oh, I do that too. You know what I mean? You're getting on this level footing with each other, because that's just inevitably going to occur. And then, you know, over the years, as it progresses and more familiarity, you know, you're eventually just kind of doing a by the numbers game where, you know, it's like, oh, you know, fuck you, Israeli. And he's, oh, fuck you too. Okay, then have a good day. And they go punt. You know, it's like the old cartoon with the sheepdog and the wolf. It used to be like a Warner Brothers cartoon, and then they would just battle it out all day. The wolf's trying to get the sheep, and the sheepdog's, you know, knocks him over the head or does whatever, and it's kind of a back and forth thing. Mm-hmm. But then it shows them, like, at the beginning of the cartoon or at the end of it, they go and punch the time card and go out and say, all right, see you tomorrow, George. All right, we'll see you tomorrow, you know. Mm. And I'm not saying that's what the Palestinian thing and the Israeli thing is, you know, but I can't help but imagine that is, especially after seeing Pallywood, that there is some truth to that.
Well, I mean, you can look. I mean, the Palestinian Authority obviously collaborates with the Israeli government and with the American government, who is
We know the ultimate. We know they're connected at the top.
No, and all of these things. And I mean, Netanyahu is a terrifying individual. You know, and if someone, you know, bumped him off, I would be pretty happy about that. But, you know, also then, you know, the other problem is with this, Chris, is that then it goes from this, the Israelis are oppressing the Palestinians, to the Israelis are involved in all world events, you know. All major terrorist attacks are really Israel. You know, the biggest one obviously being 9/11. And anyone that then disagrees with that, you know, that notion that Israel is really behind everything, you're some sort. I mean, I've been called over and over again, you know, a mole, a disinfo agent, soft on Israel. All of this sort of stuff, and this again coming from these quote unquote people that are opposed to war, you know, they bandy about the anti-war label, but that, you know, they would be fine with wiping out Israel off, you know what I mean? It's just crazy. It's really, and that's the problem, is that then they fall into that, oh, well, Israel is really behind all world, you know, all terrorists, you know, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, all these, and they're really all just Mossad agents. And then that turns into, oh, and you know, I mean, of course, obviously the Jews control the whole financial world and they control this. And then suddenly, next thing you know, you're listening to David Duke videos. And you're, oh, yeah, I mean, he's speaking the truth. You know, everything is the Jews. That's partly why I kind of shifted away. And as I said, I was very involved in, the Palestinian, Israeli, movement or whatever, you know, however you want to call it. I mean, I was deeply involved in that in college. As I said, I've been to both places. Yeah. Spent time.
Did you go
there.
To that? They said they got a really nice shopping mall right there in the Gaza Strip in Palestine.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe they do. Yeah, I was in Ramallah. Which is the five-star, occupation.
Yeah. We were talking about this a while back. I remember the Palestinian conflict and all that. And they said, oh, yeah, inside the occupied territory where it's, you know, we're told it's like, oh, it's basically like an open-air concentration camp. And the Palestinians, and it's like, oh, yeah, they got like a nice mall. And they go in there and it's like, oh, food court. Oh, yeah, food court.
Well, I mean, again, of course, within that, I mean, Gaza is basically a big prison. But let's not pretend like there aren't rich people in Gaza, you know? Let's not pretend like there aren't people in Hamas that are making money off of this. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
And I wonder, too, sometimes how much they really want to stop fighting. Because if they stop fighting, then they don't have the power that they have right now. So, you know, I mean, that's food for thought. But to go back to what I was saying before, I mean, why I've sort of shifted away from this is because it is this, like, gateway drug to a whole bunch of other shit that I just don't want to be associated with. Or I just don't have the time. You know, I'm interested in a bunch of other things, and focusing on, death and destruction in the Middle East. Again, you know, they're not talking about Yemen. No one seems to care whatsoever what's going on there, and that's the Saudis doing it, you know? But according to all those people, oh, the Saudis are, you know, they don't really do anything, you know, because Mossad really controls all of them. And I mean, it's the same thing. I mean, you and John have talked about this before. You know, it's like the reptilian stuff. It's just, if that's your friggin' worldview, then what's the point of doing any investigating, you know?
Because
it's just the reptilians.
We had a guy come on one of the calls, and he was giving us information about nanobots, you know, and how, you know, we're just, you know, maybe 5 years away from, you know, turning the switch on the nanobots, and then they're going to go ahead and, you know, commandeer our cerebral cortexes, and then we're going to be, you know, it's a new world order with a flip of the switch, and it's like, okay, mm-hmm. Then it's game over. Just go get a... I don't know. Just go to dinner or something and forget about
right,
it.
Right? No, I mean it's just put your head in the sand and you know, or it's like, you know, right? It's like flip on, you know, NBC and watch, you know, The Voice for 3 freaking hours. You know what I mean? It's like that's the problem. That's the, you know, and it's also, I mean, these people, and this is a broader thing with a lot of the alternative media. It's just they don't know how to turn off Twitter or Facebook or the internet. You know, they can't turn off InfoWars. You know, they have to, the second they wake up, they've got to, you know, they got to tweet something about this. They can't actually function in the real world. And of course, those are the perfect candidates for whatever sort of transhumanist, agenda there might be. Those are the perfect people because they're already, they've already completely connected to their computers.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You know, so
it's already, it's already underway, that aspects of it. Yeah, I wanted to read this one paragraph from the same article. It's probably the last one I'll read out of it, but James Lloyd, by appealing to their feelings rather than their sense of reason, used this social perception to bind followers to himself, giving them the belief that the group of remnant, quote-unquote, Christians, which he and his followers belonged to, were a superior class of people, and he entrusted his targets with this self-serving propaganda to ignite a self of belief in better days. They alone, he intoned, would survive the coming destruction of America, and he identified as enemies anyone he considered a threat to his best interests as opposing God himself. Anyone who did not support Lloyd's doctrines were considered inferior. He maintained that he was a great, quote-unquote, prophet, who presented a forceful opposition to the legions of the devil. James Lloyd taught that the true believers of Jesus Christ would purchase long-term survival food, which James himself sold as a middleman, shipping the product that was actually produced by Steve Quell's Safe Trek Outfitters, and could only know the truth by reading and, you know, buying his books, buying his book Beyond Babylon, quote unquote, and well as the proprietary Apocalypse Chronicles registered trademark tape sets, which would impart the truth of, quote, the gift of prophecy, end quote, that James claimed God had quote unquote blessed him with. So there you go. Yeah, okay. We tie it into biblical prophecy. You're the true Jew, white man. Pierce, I'm just informing you that now you know that you are the true Israelite brother. I'm white too. And it, so, you know, get your survivalist seeds, build your bunker, and get ready for this. Yeah. Get ready for the shit to hit the fan, and then we're going to emerge victorious because, you know, we listen to, you know, Patriot Radio.
I mean, that's in a nutshell, right down to the, you know, buy our stuff or else, you know, Midas touch.
Get ready because, yeah, you're the remnant, and it's upon you, you know, to survive. And, you know, then, what happens after that? I guess they go repopulate and then get the, you know, true republic. That's, yeah, and then there's so much more, too, that could be brought into this discussion, too. I think we haven't even really touched upon is this, because I think it's important to bring in the wider world of Christian evangelicals. And, you know, like John Hagee and, you know, okay, we're in the end times and stuff like that. And, you know, this is anything that erupts in Israel, it's like, oh, this is the trembling cup.
Yeah.
It's the end times. And I can't do John Hagee, but, you know, that's kind of
how
it
goes. No, I know what you mean.
Yeah, it's a cup of trembling and this is the end times and blah, 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 and on and on. And that really just gets people worked up all into a lather. And then, you know, you got this other kind of more fringe kind of thing that's on the same basic page. And then you have, you know, well, we saw this during the Bush administration, that those individuals kind of coming to prominence with, yeah, everything's taking place in Israel. Yeah, we're watching Israel, and yeah, we're all supporters of Israel, and they do pilgrimages to Israel, like these Christian evangelical churches, because everything's about Israel and they're God's chosen people. Even though, from what I understand, a lot of Israelis like absolutely despise Christians. And
they're murdering all the Palestinian Christians. So.
Yeah, I got a feel for that of the few encounters I've had with Israeli nationals, and at the time, you know, was carrying a Bible as a Christian and going to church and all that, and then once this particular individual who was an Israeli national got, you know, he knew where I was coming from. It's like I just feel this waves of contempt coming from the guy towards me. It was I never experienced anything quite like it.
Sure.
But but they're God's true chosen, and just like I just got a sense like the guy I was like I don't want to leave anything sitting down. He might slip something in it, you know. It's like he's like, does he want to kill me now? It's like I just got kind of that sense, like he just was had this contempt all of a sudden towards me, and it was like, oh wow, you know, what did I do? I didn't insult him or anything. I was like, but it's all basically the same program, you know, and it's being played on both sides.
Yeah, no. And the apocalyptic angle is definitely one to continue to explore, because there's so much. And I mean, again, it's so much of the, you know, they're tapping into the survivalist crowd, you know, which in and of itself is fine. You know what I mean? If you want to live off the grid, do it, you know, and have no problem. I think in a lot of ways, it's a great thing. I mean, the same thing, you know, if you want to, you know, have your own seeds, grow your own food, all that sort of stuff is great and excellent. But, I mean, with this whole sort of end time stuff, that fits in, of course, perfectly to the we're all going to be in FEMA camps.
Yep.
You know, they're going to take over.
Yeah, and then you see the modern day prophet Alex Jones on that same on those same talking points. Yeah, and then it's like, even though he's not overtly religious about it, in a lot of respects, he's definitely speaking to those individuals.
Well, he knows his crowd,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Oh, I mean, the same thing. I mean, you know, that's the same. All of that, you know, the UN is going to take over, all that kind of stuff. You know, It plays into that mentality, and again, then it plays, and then they're able to, you know, spin that into, and you know, it's really the Mexicans that are, you know, going to do this. You know, they're the ones that are going to take over. You know, they're going to take your jobs, and they're going to, you know, rape your women, and you know, blah blah blah. I love that too. You know, the Trump with this, you know, the rapists or stuff like that, as if, you know, you own your wife or your girlfriend or whatever. You know what I mean? You know, it's always they're going to rape our women. You know, it's like,
right?
What? You know?
Yeah, that's a common thing, man. Yeah, with this demonization of the other. You know.
Yeah.
It's they're after our women.
Right.
There was a movie about that. Mars wants our women. Yeah. It's a reoccurrent theme. Yeah. It's been spoofed and parodied and always with that. And yeah, you're touching upon how simplistic this these talking points are and how they're designed to touch a nerve.
Oh, no, of course. I mean, they have to be fairly simplistic because, you know, God forbid it gets, you know, even remotely complex. You know, and suddenly the whole argument falls apart, you know. So that's what I mean. That's what I really can't stand with this, Dr. Duke is so smart. He's not. Once you understand his sort of, you know, word games and mind games that he's playing, nothing he says is intelligent. Everything he says is Jews are bad. Jews control everything. Some reason they're
simple.
Yeah, exactly. They're you know, they have more money than you. They have more power. They have more influence. They control everything. And, you know, we're just this poor, you know, European Americans, really. They never had a moment. The only time they were ever powerful was when, you know, it was the founding fathers.
Yeah.
And as we've said, you know, the Freemasonic slave owners, that was the only time it was good.
Yeah.
You know, if only we can get back to that, then we'll all be fine. It's crazy. I just hope that people, I don't know. I don't see that many people, you know, talking out about this. You know, this is particularly pervasive in, like, the libertarian movement or what it's slowly devolved into. The same thing, I think, you know, there's a lot of those sort of undercurrents within, Ron Paul's whole movement as well, the sort of cloak racism and apocalyptic worldviews and that kind of shit. You know, they're feeding into that. And I just, you know, I just, people need to kind of wake up to this and understand that this is going on. And again, you know, it doesn't mean that you're a cultural Marxist or that you are, you know, whatever.
Yeah, because, real quick, I wanted to say something about David Duke is that Alex Jones, I listened to him for a long time, years, you know, back in the 90s and stuff. And he would talk about how the Ku Klux Klan are really feds, you know, they're FBI, you know, so thoroughly infiltrated that, you know, they're indistinguishable from just, you know, another branch of the FBI, which does make a lot of sense. I mean, if they would have to be infiltrated, but, did he bring that up with David Duke? I don't recall him asking him if David Duke was, what his particular relationship was to the FBI.
Oh, no. All David Duke says, anytime you ask him about his, affiliation and being a grand wizard of the KKK, is just that the Ku Klux Klan was a nonviolent, you know, group that promotes civil rights. And, you know, they're really just misunderstood, you know, the same way that Hitler was.
Yeah, and then they ignore Freemasonry. Like Albert Pike was the founder of the
Ku Klux Klan, and Oh no, no, of course. I mean, yeah, exactly. No, no, no. Of course. Yeah. Oh, sure. And then wrap up Christianity and all of this in a neat little bundle. Again, as if there's nothing occult in the Christian religion. mm-hmm. uh, That's all that David Duke has to say on that topic. You know, he just sort of, you know, skirts around that entirely. He doesn't want to have any, you know, he doesn't really want to get into any details about that. That's it. And again, right. You're raising another interesting question too. Who knows who David Duke is really, could be working for.
Yeah, I would not be too surprised if, he was FBI and a Freemason and, whatever else, but, are those particular groups the end all and be all in any respect? No, I mean, but you got to wonder. But that's what you usually end up with if you are able to do some deep digging. It doesn't take long to run into the Jesuits either, and it doesn't take long to. Yeah, I mean, I was looking up stuff about the atomic weaponry, and then who was the guy that compiled all the eyewitness statements and stuff? The journalist that was there on the scene after the dropping of the bomb, in Hiroshima, and then, it turns out he has Jesuit affiliations, and he is also a member of Skull and Bones, and his name escapes me right now, but. You go off on any kind of trail, and then it's like, oh, Jesuits, oh, yeah, some, secret society affiliation.
Sure,
or
the
another.
CIA. Yeah.
CIA.
Oh, no, but right. I mean, that's the thing, is that, Duke doesn't want you to do any of that. You know, just know that there's somewhere in there, there's a Jew. You know, or someone with a Jewish name, and that's really who's responsible.
Yeah, keep it simple. Just keep your eye out for the hook nose.
Exactly.
Go to the grocery store.
That's all you need to know. Don't worry. Chris, I actually got to get running.
Oh, yeah, it was real good talking to you, man.
Yeah. Definitely. As always, I always love coming on. I always really enjoy. End up in. A different place, but I like that the past three times we've kind of had some similar ideas floating around. So I always enjoy coming on the show, and anytime you guys want me to come back on, I'm more than happy to.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. John was bringing up some points too. He said he wanted to kind of flesh some points out that he had made. You guys had, note comparison going on there. So yeah, maybe we'd, do that next time.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. But thanks again, guys, for having me on. And let's talk soon.
All right. Real good, man.
Yeah.
I'll talk to you later.
Yep.
Okay. Take care.
Oh, we're meeting at the courthouse at 8 o'clock tonight. You just come in the door and take the first turn to the right. Be careful when you get there. We'd hate to be bereft, but we're taking down the names of everybody turning left.
Oh, we're the John Birch Society, the John Birch Society, here to save our country from a communistic plot. Join the John Birch Society, help us fill the ranks. To get this movement started, we need lots of tools and cranks.
Now there's no one that we're certain the Kremlin doesn't touch.
We think that Westbrook Pegler doth protest a bit too much. We only hail the hero from whom we got our name.
We're not sure what he did,
but he's our hero just the same. Oh, we're the John Birch Society, the John Birch Society.
Socialism is the ism dismalest of all.
Join the John Birch Society, there's so much to do. Have you heard they're serving vodka at the WCTU?
Well, you've heard about the agents that we've already named. Well, NCA has agents that are flatly unashamed.
We're after Rosie Clooney.
We've gotten Pinky Lee.
And the day we get Red Skelton, won't that be a victory?
Oh, we're the John Birch Society, the John Birch Society. Norman Vincent Peale may think he's kidding us along, but the John Birch Society knows he spilled the beans.
He keeps on preaching brotherhood, but we know what he means. We'll teach you how to spot 'em in the cities or the sticks.
or even Jasper Junction is just full of Bolsheviks.
The CIA's subversive,
and so's the FCC.
There's no one left but thee and we,
and we're not sure of thee.
Oh, we're the John Birch Society, the John Birch Society, here to save our country from a communistic plot. Join the John Birch Society, holding off the Reds. We'll use our hands and hearts, and if we must, we'll use our heads.
Do you want Justice Warren to be your commissar? Do you want Mrs. Khrushchev in there with the DAR? You cannot trust your neighbors or even next of kin.
If mommy is a commie, then you gotta turn her in.
Oh, we're the John Birch Society, the John Birch Society, fighting for the right to fight for the right. Join the John Birch Society as we're marching on. We'll all be glad to see you when we're meeting in the dawn, in the dawn, in the dawn.